We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Jack Ramsey's Dan and Meringue. Brandon Sprague. It's a wonderful March 5th in lousy smarch weather. It's snowed three of the past 5 days. I don't know what the hell that's all about. The Portland Trailblazers no longer undefeated in the month of March after being winless in February. They're now 2-1 in March, beating Memphis Grizzlies twice, falling to the Minnesota Timberwolves last night in a nice little game. We called it a valiant effort today on Danny and Dusty. It was a valiant effort. But we'll dive into that and all of your questions. It's a mailbag edition. But first, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, the illustrious, Brandon Sprague. What's up, buddy?
Here, I'm ready to go. It's good to do the pod again. I will say, as weird as the weather has been, because quite literally yesterday I woke up at 5 a.m. with snow all over my car, it appears we've got sunshine for the next 4 to 5 days.
It appears
we're going to get a tease of spring break here, Daniel, so I'm pretty excited about that. The Mighty Wolves are 5-2. We're having a nice season this year on the side. We're not tanking this year. We're trying to go for the chip. And I was disappointed the Blazers lost, but a feisty good loss. A feisty good loss. Damn near did it. Couldn't quite do it. Probably shouldn't have been hanging with a team like that. But they had their opportunities and it balled out. So, yeah, a nice feisty loss after starting 2-0 in the month.
And that game last night against the Timberwolves was basically missing everyone, which is that a good place to start? All of the injuries and updates, news and notes before we get going?
Yeah, you know, I think we could start there. Because we got a lot of questions I want to get through, but it's weird. I'm catching the games, like the Memphis games, for example. I recorded the first one. I didn't catch it live. I'm not...
How dare you?
Well, they're in such a weird spot, man. It's like they're so banged up.
There's I hosted two watch parties, dude, where I'd had my camera off, so I can't really. I had draft stuff going on one screen while I was half watching the other. I'm like, hey, they're back in this game. All right, let me go ahead and pay attention again. You know, so I get it. Those two Memphis games were fun, but a different watch for sure.
The second one was fun. Second one was more fun to me. Even though they won the first one, the second one to me I liked because I was like, oh, they lost. And then they had that comeback at the end. And, you know, Ant had such a slow starting weird first half. And then he closes it so strong. Jabari played really well. And, you know, I liked what I saw there. But it's in a weird spot. We have a question kind of related to this. They just have so many guys that I think at the end of the day, if we're all being honest, they have a lot of guys playing that are not a part of this ultra mastermind rebuild, right? It's just kind of some plug and play pieces and they're hoping to find something from it. So it's kind of a tough part of the season when injuries play a big factor like this. And as much as I'm bummed and I'm sure you're bummed and fans are bummed, it's the worst for the organization. They have to evaluate this stuff and they have to make decisions, pivotal decisions.
On very limited data.
Information.
Yeah, no, and it's going to be... This summer, and we'll talk about it a lot as we kind of push on, a lot of questions about the future already. I think people are trying to skip March and April and get to was it May 12th through the 16th, I believe, is a combine. And then stupidly, the draft lottery is Sunday.
Okay, so here's my counter to this. You told me that. It shocked me. I think we had the same reaction. Is there a chance they're not trying to sandwich this between a game like they normally do, and instead they're like trying to draw out the picks a little more? Because remember, you and I at the lottery last year, we would react, and it was like it 4 seconds, and it's the next team. And there's something about playing it out a little bit and letting people kind of marinate in the feelings of maybe we got number one. That's my only thought, is maybe they're trying to stretch it out on an open day where they're not on a time crunch.
Yeah, and I mean, the NBA is trying to do what the NFL did. The problem is they just screw it up at every turn. Making the NBA draft 2 days, which I've already talked to front office executives, and they're like, but why?
Like, it's so dumb.
What's being sold publicly is the teams need more time. I've talked to said teams. They don't. they don't. They're fine. They know going in kind of how things are going to go. And if one picks a little bit different, you know what they do? They pivot.
Yes. Yeah. What? Wait, they have plans after their plans?
No, it turns out when you've got a full year between said opportunities, you go in with a little bit of a plan. And some teams better than other, but you know.
I would love a good 30 for 30 in finding out if anybody would willing to be honest and be like, just capturing teams that their first pick was taken and they weren't ready, but they were on the clock and they're like, oh no, who do we go here?
I do know that that happened with a team, not the Blazers. 2 years ago. I want to say it was a pick. It was pick in the 20s, and they're like, "There's nobody going to take this guy here. We're taking him a bit early." He went, and they went, "Oh shit!" they had no backup plan, and so they drafted somebody, and he did not make his next contract.
Oh, shocker. I want the 30 for 30 on that. Yeah. I want a GM to sit in there who's been fired and is clearly not going to get hired.
So I want to look at the camera. I guess it's 3 years ago now.
Well, I want that person to look at the camera like, we weren't ready. We overlooked everything. We thought nobody would touch that guy at that point, and they did. And here we go. I also choose to believe that the Cavaliers did that the year they drafted Anthony Bennett number one. It was like an accident. It was like, wait, what name did we put in?
It's tough. As it pertains to this draft, it is shaping up to be better than that draft. So,
yeah, I think it'll get a little better too. The more this, you know, gets closer and closer, not a maybe a deep draft per se, but I think a lot of guys like Mike Schmidt would like project guys that could be two ways with a hope of something. And then I think you're going to get a couple role guys in this that people aren't talking so much about. Obviously you wrote your big piece on the Patreon about Sar and you know, how he kind of fits and what he is as a prospect.
3,400 words.
3,400 words. Go check it out. Subscribe to the Patreon if you haven't.
I'll have another one on Cody Williams and then another one on Zach Rizzuche. So there will be 10,000 words on three players.
There's four or five players that people really like, and then maybe 6, 7, 8, 9. Four, you know, whatever, however many more that like teams look at and say that could be a role guy, you know, like look at Dean Wade tonight, right? You never know if you're going to find a Dean Wade.
Shout out to the Cavs for shutting up the Celtics so I didn't have to hear about them again tomorrow. I do appreciate that. Selfishly, this is about me.
Where are you at right now? I know you're writing about the team, you're covering all the games and stuff, but like, you know, you kind of seem like you agreed with my stance on the Memphis games. Where are you at in general? Just how the season is versus like what they are.
Yeah, I think I need a little bit of a, okay, I'm not going to watch this hard until they give me a reason to, with particularly those two games, because I'm like, what am I evaluating? Like that's like when I watch games, this is going to sound just like so jaded. I don't really watch games for enjoyment right now. I think I've kind of gotten past it. Like, don't get me wrong, I collectively enjoy watching basketball. But I'm not like, I enjoy watching the Blazers play. I am more, okay, what can I take out of this tactically, growth-wise? Like, I'm looking at it from an analytical perspective, and not like the analytics, but like, these are the things that I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And when they're playing the 10th through 22nd members of the Memphis Grizzlies, it's very hard for me to evaluate that. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah,
I don't. No. So I did come back to do my normal rewatches, and I found some different things that I liked. Because I'll always find something. Like, oh, let me watch Chris Murray for this entire quarter or his entire shift. Like, I'll watch two and, you know, what he's doing defensively or what I've changed to lately is what he's doing offensively.
Yeah.
Kind of get an understanding of, like, where he's working on things and things that him and I have talked about and kind of, like, what he's trying to implement and what he's working on. Stuff like that. That's really where I'm at right now. For everyone who covers the team, and I'm not going to speak for him, but I'm going to speak for him for Hyken. I know Hyken's very much in the same boat because there'll be times when he looks at me, he's like, I don't know what to write tonight. You know? And I'll look at him.
I asked him in an interview on the radio. I said, yo, what do you got coming up? And he goes, I'm thinking and working on that.
Yeah.
It's like, damn.
It's tough, man.
It's slim pickings. I know.
When you're, what, four of your top seven are out? Four of your top seven, five of your top eight are out? What do you do, man?
Well, like,
it's just a difficult proposition.
Let me start the questions off with this then, and then we'll dive in because we got a lot of listener questions.
Oh, before we go down, speaking of injuries.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes.
Ayton, I would expect to be probably a coin toss tomorrow, maybe a little bit less than a coin toss tomorrow. I think you're probably looking at Friday. And then there's, I would say Friday, you're probably looking at Scoot being questionable. I know he's done some stuff. He has been working out. He's actually doing some on court stuff. He went through workouts last night in Minnesota. So, for everybody freaking out, he's not dead. he'll be back. I think DA will be back relatively soon. Malcolm, he's with the team. I don't have any update on Malcolm. I think there's probably a good chance Malcolm might be done.
I kind of have felt that way with the we'll reevaluate.
It's bothering him. Jeremy, if anybody was going to take some time off, which would and should be him, his back was pretty jacked going into the All-Star break. I don't know when he picked up the quad knock in the game, so it wasn't a quad contusion. It was quad soreness, which means he probably picked up a knock in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's got it, you know, it's overstretched or whatever it is. So maybe they give him a couple of days, but I don't think that's anything too serious. I continue to be told that the hope is that Shaden's able to play like the final five or six games of the season to work through. Remember, you know, the thing about that surgery is it kind of gets tough and you got to break it up and work through some stuff. And they'd rather him work through that before this end of the season so he can kind of go into the summer not having to deal with it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where they stand injury-wise. So everything looks, for the most part, we knock on all the wood, is progressing positively. So there you go.
Let me start the questions off. Yeah. I actually have one for you. So I said this the other day on the radio show of, like, you know, no matter how up and down we're all getting and injuries and all that stuff, like, oh, what's the future going to be? You know, and it's like, well, I don't know if we should be comping this team to any in the West playoff picture. It should be more like, yo, like, I think you're just looking for parts, right? Like, they're parts shopping right now and they're sorting. The one thing I'd be curious about to ask Joe, this has got to be the hardest part of his job has to be this. When you're efforting to do rebuild, you have young pieces that you value, that you think can grow and get better, and then, hey, he's playing 30 games in a season. Scoot's going to miss significant time. Obviously, the veterans have dealt with their on and off injuries throughout the season, but I think that's the thing that I'm curious about from an organizational standpoint. It's like,
how do you make the evaluations?
How much more challenging this makes the rebuild because you have to evaluate this stuff as you go along and there's not a lot to evaluate.
Yeah. I don't think they can sit here and say, there's been a bunch of people who are like, this is actually year three of the rebuild. And I will push back on that endlessly. If Damian Lillard's on your team, you're not rebuilding.
Oh, I was here at this year three of just not being good.
That's fine. But like, yeah. But the rebuild doesn't start until Dame gets traded. That's, you can say I'm carrying the Blazers' water. I don't care. That's if you have a future first ballot Hall of Famer on your team in his prime, you're not rebuilding. That's just not how the NBA works. But because of the lack of effective or winning basketball in the previous 2 years, this city and this fan base is already kind of itchy, like, we don't like losing, you know. Mm-hmm. They aren't, we said it, you know, people got mad about it, but you aren't built for this, and they're not.
Yeah.
And they can't go into this offseason and be like, well, you know, we had all these injuries, all shucks, we'll have to run back what we had last year. I very much don't believe that that's an option, not only from the fan base, but from the organization. I don't think from the top down that they're going to allow that. And that has to deal with more with not just the team, but like getting the TV deal right, like getting the distribution right, making right by the fans, getting a team that makes a little bit more functional sense,
mm-hmm.
moving some things around, not just financially, but like getting the team in a better position basketball-wise. So I genuinely believe that that's things that they're going to have to address this summer. The biggest part of that for me is where the lottery lands them. That's going to be such a big decider in how big a step and how big a swing that they can take with certain things. So I understand the sentiment of like, it has been very difficult to make evaluations.
Yeah. It's got to just...
But they can't sit there and be like, well, we need more data. It's like, unfortunately, you're going to have to make not the decision, but like you're going to have to make some decisions based on the limited data. And it's both fair and unfair. It's unfair because a lot of the angst does come from the Olshay period of not making a move and be like, well, the timelines. Timeline is a curse word in this fan base. It's like, so... Yeah, you're being unfairly tagged with that. But on the flip side, you've been not good for 2+ years, now 3. This one was supposed to be not good. If you didn't know that, that's on you as a fan. Like everyone, right. Everyone was telling you. But organizationally, I don't think they can stand up there and be like, I don't think they can sit up there and say we need another year to like get the understanding of what this is.
No, I agree with that, but I still the point still stands of how difficult that stuff has to kind of be internally, and how maybe even second guess a little bit of like, I'm going with this, and in the back of your mind it creeps in just a tad. I do know a lot of people in my personal life, I don't know about yours, that are Blazer fans. The unfortunate thing is those 2 years with Dame not being good and knowing this year was not going to be good, it's not about a quick rebuild. Per se, it's. I think for a lot of people, it's like, how do you get me? You know,
what's the hook? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've mentioned my brother-in-law. He's as big of a Blazer fan as I know, and he's like, man, like I know they're gonna be bad next year, and like even if you get Cooper, if you capture the flag, it's like odds are you're not gonna be good that year. You know, it's like some of the fans I think are playing this out a little bit and saying, well, does 3 years turn into 5? Does it turn into 6? And then it's like, hey, we're here. And I think that's the thing, is what can you do to capture the people from saying, okay, maybe we're not there from a win-loss perspective. How are we still super engaged with what's going on right now? You know?
And that's the thing, is like OKC took 5 years from the time that Dame blew up the organization till now. You know? Like,
yeah.
They're gonna make the playoffs this year.
A 1 or 2 seed. I mean,
but it's a 5-year gap, like, and that's tough to do. A lot has to go your way, but mm-hmm. that's the crux of this, is you have to figure out something, and I don't think you can run it back next year and be like, oh, we just need a gadget. This is really an information gathering season. It's like, it's unfortunate that it didn't go that way this year and you didn't get the information, but you're going to have to make some decisions based on the limited data that you have.
Yeah. Let's get to the questions, and I'll start with the first one. Yeah. It's a draft-related question. Are the Blazers looking to draft 2 rookies in the first round, or is it likely they'll trade both picks to move up for someone they really want?
Again, that's so much that depends on where the lottery goes. You know, if they land.
So this sounds like they're not in a great spot. It sounds like hypothetically,
if they fall down to 6 and they have
6, 7, 6, or 8, yeah.
They have 6 and 17, and they use that to move up to like 4 or 3. We'll see. I don't think that they're bringing 2 rookies onto this team, 2 first round rookies. That's for sure. That salary slot. Now, could they use their first for to combine him, or they get a better lottery slot, or something along those lines and go one first and one second and use the second as a two-way, yeah, I could see that happening. But using two firsts, I'd be pretty surprised.
Is your early read on this, as you're diving in and you're reading all the mocks, is your early read on this, though, that like kind of like the top two picks last year, maybe in the top three, I know Portland got it, there's a certain level where it becomes untouchable? Or
no,
do you think
I don't think the number one's untouchable in this draft.
So you think you could pivot out to where you want to go, yeah, if you offer the right stuff?
Like, so much of it is in the eye of the beholder. Like, if
yeah,
San Antonio went one, would they take Sar? Probably not. It's like, we have Wemby at home, you know? They'd probably look at Topic or Cody Williams. I think they'd lead Topic because of the very obvious hole there. But it kind of depends on like who you prioritize there. If the Wizards, you know, they got the number one overall pick, they need so many things that they could take basically anyone. Like, it was like, well, they have a lot of wings. Like, are they committed to Kyle Kuzma long term? No.
No.
So you could take Cody Williams one. You know, they traded away Daniel Gafford, so maybe they go get Alex Sarr, and they have Sarr and Koulibaly, and they have this French nightmare front court. You know, like, you look at the draft boards, and maybe they really like Risacher. Maybe that's their guy. Maybe they look at the draft board, and they're like, you know, that's actually not our guy. We want to take Tijan Salun, who's like skyrocketing up boards right now. Another French monster who's 6'10". He's kind of like a forward who plays the five. But he's an 18-year-old with just dumb measurables.
Yeah.
So you can talk yourself into... You can talk yourself into a lot of different things, but I think it really matters about who's going where. I should say which team is drafting where.
How many of the current Trailblazer players do you think have potential? It's a tough question. To be in the rotation of a championship caliber team moving forward.
As of right now, three.
Let's see if we name the same ones. Go.
DeAndre Ayton.
Okay.
Jeremy Grant.
Okay.
Malcolm Brogdon.
Really?
Where was DA at 2 years ago?
No, I agree with that.
Okay.
Brogdon's the one where it's not like Brogdon's not, I mean, he was a sixth man of the Boston freaking Celtics, but to me, I was wondering if you were going to slip Ann in there.
No, he hasn't shown that yet.
Okay. All right.
That's the step he needs to take. Now, if he's like your sixth man, maybe. But
I agree with that, though. I think.
But it's those three because of the experience.
Yeah, they've all been closer there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jeremy, it's more about like what he is,
right?
Like, there's not a team that's a competitive team right now that's chasing the finals that would say no to Jeremy Grant. Not one.
Well, he's been on a couple of the teams that are in contention right now. Anyway, I mean, we've seen him in that spot.
So,
Who from Chris, Tumani, and Jamari grouping has the most offensive upside, and who from that group has the best chance of developing into an above-average spot-up shooter?
Who's Tumani and who?
Who from Chris, Tumani, and Jabari?
Okay.
Has the most offensive upside, and who from that group has the best chance of developing into an above average spot up shooter?
Chris is the spot up shooter because his mechanics have kind of shown it. I know he's been riding the Aminu train lately, hitting the side of the backboard with some shots, but scaring the crap out of me. And the thing about
man,
Chris is,
a name I haven't heard in a minute, man.
He hit the side of the backboard last night, and I went, Chris. I think if you go back and watch the watch party, you actually hear me say his name out loud because I was like, Chris. Like, I'm not gonna lie. I pull for Chris because he's a great dude, and I love talking to him. He's just, I will talk to him about a million things other than basketball, but he cares so much, and it bothers him when his shooting goes, and you can see it. And I've talked to him after games, and I'm like, how you doing, man? And he's just like, I'm like, it's all right. You know, kind of like, cause he gets pissed and you know, he's like, oh, I just want the shot to fall. And I love the rookies because you see these growth moments. Like, he had a great game against the Grizzlies where he shot well and he contributed on both sides. But, like, he has stuff in his game where you're like, yeah, I can see I can see him being successful on offense. Two, his jumper is, I don't know if it's unredeemable, but it's pretty rough. Jabari, like, he's really got to work. Like, he tore it all the way down, and because his jumper this year is different than last year, and he was feeling more confident, but he's still not there. I usually look, year three is kind of like when you start to see that stuff form, because it takes a long time to kind of get through it. But I would rank them Chris, Tumani, Jabari. I think Jabari's going to, like, he's already got the push shot, which is how he's been much more effective around the rim this year. Like, anytime he tries to go up strong and straight without dunking, he gets his shit sent. Gobert absolutely annihilated his shot.
Oh, dude, yesterday. The left-handed block that he
just
had on him.
Yeah, sent it to the middle of the floor. I was like, yeah. And that's the thing.
You get blocked so hard that you fall to the ground, man. Yeah. You got swatted.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, he's working on that because he has to cover so much ground because he's, like, 6'7 and a half. If he was 6'9", 6'10", it wouldn't be an issue. Like, him and Drew Eubanks are, like, the same size. He might actually be shorter than Drew. But he doesn't – this is going to sound funny. He doesn't have Drew's bunnies. So he's got to get rid of the ball quickly and, like, catch defenders off guard. I'm not sure his jumper comes around fully, but I would say Chris, with an off season, I'm most confident in him.
Yeah, spot-up shots are
– But he's also got offensive wiggle. Like, he can attack closeouts and has a little bit of footwork. Two, I would be interested to see what he does this summer and kind of what he focuses on.
By the way, side note, it's amazing. I'm watching I had the Dame game on the main screen, and I had the T-Wolf game on the iPad. It's amazing when you send a double with Dame in Milwaukee, he's not passing out of a double to Al-Farouq Aminu. He's passing to Brooke Lopez, who's hitting Bobby Portis on a nice clean cut for an easy bucket.
Yeah, it was weird, huh?
It's weird how that happens, I thought it was all Dame's fault.
Looks different.
When the time comes, how do Roops, Jabari, and Tumani fit together? Will they be fighting each other for minutes? Will we need to trade one? Can they play together, etc.?
I think long-term, Roops is a 3-4. I think he might early on get some kind of like big 2 minutes, especially with his shooting. But for those that don't know, I am disgustingly high on Roops. And I've talked to you about this, Brandon. Like, yeah. I think Roops is a guy who could surprise a lot of people, like Ant, where you're like, And this isn't like something like I'm just now coming up with. You can go find the tweet from the beginning of the season. I was reckless and I said, I think Roops has that it factor. Doesn't mean I think he's going to be an all-star. I just think he's going to be a lot better than people think he's going to be. Like, I think he's going to be a very solid plus contributor.
I mean, I don't want to say that it's the same level per se, but like, it is hard not to naturally lean to
Nick.
Yeah, it's hard not to, right? It's not just the French thing. It's just the way they're built. Yeah. He kind of looks. He's so raw.
He's so rangy and just kind of covers ground. And you see, like, the shooting's real. The shooting is a real thing. Like, I'm confident he's going to be a plus shooter. And now the volume, I think he's only taken 23 threes now in the NBA, but he's 12 of 23. Which, good number. He's going to cool off. There's no doubt about that. But he was also shooting, I believe, 43% in the G League. Same line. Like, if you can shoot, you can shoot. That's going to be a thing that's translatable. If it were me, the two guys I think that have the easiest way to fit into a team are obviously Roops, number one, but I think then two. I love Jabari. I love Jabari. But if you're asking me between those three, which one of them makes the most sense for this team? It's Roops, Tumani, Jabari.
I mean, Jabari to me is just a four. I know he plays sometimes, they play some small ball stuff, but I just view him as a four.
And it's also kind of like Trendon, who Trendon I love, but you had to get really weird in order to accommodate Trendon. And with role players, you can't really accommodate them. So you almost need him to go to a team like a Minnesota, where he could play the four while Naz Reid plays the five. You know what I mean? Like, so you've got a five who can space the floor, so you have more room to operate on the inside. So I think those are the kind of situations where, unless Portland gets a four or five that, you know, is more floor stretchy, I think he kind of works with Wop, but the problem is Wop's not really a rim protector. So love Wop, but he got baptized. got baptized by Rudy. It's tough to see, but Rudy's
a a lot of people have been baptized
by
Rudy.
Yeah, Rudy's a big Frenchman. Yucky. You realize how big Rudy is when he makes WAP look small.
WAP, just sometimes I watch him play, and like he just strikes me as a guy at an open run. He shoots the three, and the coach is like, damn it, take it down low. He's like, coach, I was a guard at one point. You know?
Yeah, no, he's like, look, WAP's going to let that thing fly. That's what I love about him.
He's, me too.
His shots per 36, just he gets that thing up.
I'm sure this will not be the first time we get this question. This is the question of questions, I guess, I think, for most. We got a lot of good ones in here. We're going through a mailbag edition here of Jack Ramsey's. Do you see a future with Ant, Scoot, Shaden, and if not, who is going to go?
No. They're going to make a decision on one of those, and it's too early to tell.
Yeah, you're kind of sitting on the next summer, right? You're saying like another season of it?
I just don't think that that's the one thing they don't have the data on, is Scoot. Like, they understand what Ant can get to. But the question is with Ant is the consistency. And if Ant gets more consistent, then it's, you know. But they need to see a lot more from Scoot. Not just good. They just need to see more tape. He just needs to play more. And honestly, to be fair, the same with Shaden. Shaden's in a little bit of a different boat just because positionally he's different from the other two.
What players made you fall? What players made you really fall for basketball? What players made you become a Blazer fan? It's a long list. I got to try to narrow this down.
Yeah. So the first Blazers game I ever went to was a Blazers-Lakers game in L.A. That's how I became a Blazers fan.
Roughly know the year?
89?
Oh, geez, a youngin.
Yeah, no, it was at the Forum.
Yeah. Wow, the Great Western Forum. Throwback.
I'm old.
Sex in that building.
Yeah, no, I've watched Magic play. I've watched Clyde. So,
I worked at Enterprise. Let me tell a quick story on that. I worked at Enterprise Rent-A-Car for a summer in college. They give you the tools. And what was great about it was like the airport location. You sometimes would get celebrities like Cal Ripken came through. Zeebo came back to get some stuff from a storage shed. I've never to this day still smelled stronger weed in my life than when Zeebo walked in.
Oh, yeah.
But I had a guy that was, we're talking hoops, and he was a Laker fan. And he said, you know what I miss? Because they had Staples Centers at this point, right? He goes, you know what I miss about the Forum? And I'm like, what? He's like, you could smell the sex Magic was having in that place. It was magical. And I was just like, I go, sir, that's kind of disgusting. He goes, I know,
but probably smelled like lotion and glitter.
Oh, Jerry Buss butthole. No, thank you. Not on that one. Give me a non-Blazer that helped you fall. Give me a couple names.
Lonzo Mourning.
Okay. That's a good one.
Larry Johnson.
Yeah, LJ. Mama.
Jason Williams.
White Chocolate.
Penny. Yeah. Shaq.
Yeah.
David Robinson, Charles Barkley, Sean Kemp.
The Rain Man.
Yeah. If you're noticing, there's a lot of physical freaks in this group. That's like, that was what I grew up. I mean, you're only a couple years younger than me. Like, guys charging down the lane and baptizing people regularly was the basketball we grew up watching.
Yeah. And I noticed you didn't say MJ.
Always thought he was great, but he wasn't like the guy that I loved watching.
You know, I loved and appreciated him. I ended up rooting at the end because I was like, God, can somebody else win a damn title, please?
Yeah.
Like Reggie, the year Reggie hit the shot on him on the push-off, I thought they were
Reggie I grew to love because a friend of mine in middle school was a huge Pacers fan and Reggie Miller fan. When she was in seventh grade, Reggie, after the game, she had been to a couple Blazers-Pacers games over the years, always had a sign. She was over the rail. Reggie gave her his jersey, his wristband, and he used to wear the finger bands.
Yeah, the finger thing.
And the finger band had his number on it, had 31 on it. And he was so cool. Like, he like signed everything and gave it to her and like made her year. And ever since then, I was always like, Reggie's a good guy to me.
That's pretty sick. I love hearing that. By the way, Penny Hardaway, for that same reason, is dead to me. I was maybe 3 feet behind him when he was a Knick. And I was like, I wasn't even.
Well, he was miserable. He was miserable as a Knick. That's why.
Clearly, the guy was absolutely done with the league at that point. But like 3 feet behind you, and I'm like 13. Like to be able to straight ignore, not even like look back, like, hey man, thanks, I appreciate the love, but no, like nothing. He wouldn't look behind. Same way, I had a friend who was a random Rockets fan, and he got a Steve Franchise signature.
Oh yeah,
Francis' second year in the league. It was a magical moment. Mine's a lot of those guys. Mm-hmm. I'll add a couple names. I cannot begin to tell you. So growing up in Portland. You know, I played a lot of basketball, but, like, I hated playing when it was really wet outside. I didn't like a wet ball. I just didn't like the feeling. So I had the Nerf hoop inside on the door, and I used to spend hours playing on that thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I quite literally was stealing and going against one-on-one Hakeem Olajuwon. Dream. Dream was my dude. I was really happy when he beat Shaq. They had this Taco Bell commercial. It was like Shaq versus Olajuwon. They made the double-decker because
That's right.
Yeah,
shout out double-decker greatness.
I love the double decker. And so, got to shout out Dream. One of my all time favorites, GP, the glove. I loved him. Him and Sean Kemp were a ton of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for Kendrick Perkins. Big Smooth, Slow Mo 3.
Sam Eddie Perkins. Jones.
What?
Sam Perkins.
Oh, what did I say? Kendrick?
You said Kendrick.
Sorry. Sam Perkins.
I was like, for who?
I got the nickname right. I watch a lot of ESPN.
You got your Perkins just mixed up in it. I was like, huh.
Blasphemy. I'm sorry about that.
Big Kendrick fan, huh?
National title winning player, Sam Perkins. I loved him.
Great.
Eddie Jones, AI. I was a big Duncan at Wake Forest guy.
Oh, God, yes. Chris Paul at Wake. Yeah.
Yes.
Fab Five. I was a big Juwan Howard, Chris Webber guy.
Yep. Yep.
Hated Leitner.
I loved it's kind of a sad ending, but I was quite fond of anytime Stuart Scott was hosting SportsCenter and he got to call the Atlanta Hawk highlights because League Pass didn't exist for me.
Oh yeah.
And that was the only way I could watch Mutombo and Mookie.
Yeah.
Mookie.
Oh yeah, Blaylock, yeah. That's a good one. Little finger wag from Mutombo was great too.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I mean I liked a lot of the power forwards of that era. That was my jam.
Yeah, me too.
I've always had a thing for goofy, weird point guards and power forwards.
Yes, I can dig that vibe. What would you rather see Portland do with its second round picks in June 2024? Trade them away for future picks or draft and stash overseas?
I mean, I kind of trust what this team does in the draft. So if they feel like they can get somebody here, great. If not, send them to another draft. One thing you're realizing, though, right now is that second-round picks have real value.
Yes.
They're changing hands a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Which players are most likely to be traded or released in the offseason? I mean, I'm going to throw Brog has to be in this, right?
I'd say Brog's number one by a pretty, pretty long margin.
What do they do with Time Lord, do you think? I'm interested in that.
I think a lot of that depends on his medicals. If his medicals come back better, then perhaps yes. If not, maybe he has to come back and prove that he can play.
Yeah.
Or the offers aren't good enough, and they're like, hey, let's get him on a rehab tour, and then move him at the deadline. But yeah, Brog is that's
I feel like -450 in Vegas to get moved, right?
Yeah, maybe
that'd be like a heavy favorite.
Maybe worse than that.
Yeah.
-600.
Any others?
Right now, no.
Like JG, is JG in this for you?
I don't think so. I think there's an opportunity. I think for the first time you could talk about it legitimately. If depending on like again, if the Blazers win the lottery and they're like, you know what, we're gonna go down the path of Alex Saar and you're gonna play Saar at the four. Now you have an issue where a guy's eating up 36 minutes sure. with Jeremy. And you could say, well, you're going to play Saar at the 5-2. Okay, I'm like, all right, so you can get 12 minutes there, 14 minutes there. And you can steal 10 minutes at the 4. Is that enough? Which is like, maybe not. So yeah. you start maybe kicking that drum a little bit, but I don't think it's a guarantee, but Malk's the one for sure.
Through all the injury struggles and growing pains, what, if anything, strikes you as the silver lining for the season? WAP has been a huge surprise, but I'm struggling to find optimism. I think this kind of highlights what we talked about a little earlier. Of this has kind of been my thing, and I don't mean it as any kind of shot. I think you evaluate everything, and it's like, what has been the brightest spot for them this year? And I think that's the tough thing to answer, is because of the injuries, the inconsistency, the lack of minutes that certain groups have not had. What do you highlight as your bright spot for the season, assuming this injury stuff just continues to plague them the rest of the way?
Yeah, WAP has been nice. It's certainly been a welcome surprise for sure.
Jabari was a good one for me for a while.
Yeah, no, like Jabari is a real like, okay, yeah, no, like he's a role player in the league. Two is definitely up there for me because, like, you knew kind of coming out of summer league that the Suns really liked him, but to come out and like be a starter was that, what, week two? I was like, whoa, okay, all right, Kamara. I think Roops has the potential to close the season and be like, there's an interesting thing there. Let's see what a summer, like a full offseason looks like for him. That could be it. Ayton finding his groove with Anthony would probably be something I would look at. There was like that little period there for like 3 weeks where they were cooking. And yeah. I'm like, okay, there's a little something here. But yeah, it's tough to really find much in there. And that's part of the problem is that's why they have the second most lineups in the league this year, starting lineups, 31. I think they only have one lineup with over 1,000 possessions together. Like
That starting lineup number sounds fake. It sounds made
31. They played 59 games.
That is unbelievable.
60 games, something like that. What do they have now? They have 22 games. So they played 60 games. So they have more lineups right now than every other game.
Jesus.
Like that's insane. So you have no continuity at all.
No.
So I was hoping, you know, maybe Bodgy would find a way to show a little bit more, get another opportunity with all the injuries. But he's just not like basketball IQ ready there.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. And that's again, those are the like letdowns, I guess, of this season, is that some of the opportunities just weren't there.
Yeah.
So,
I saw this earlier. Does Drexler deserve a statue? If you're wondering why is this question being asked right
because
now.
Because his son asked.
Adam Drexler put on Twitter, randomly, unsolicited, yo, Portland, Rip City fans, why doesn't my dad have a statue yet? And I don't know Adam Drexler. I don't know Clyde Drexler. All I'll say is I was texting with somebody about this because I saw the tweet. And I kind of chuckled because I'm like,
Where does Clyde live?
Houston.
Who does he work for?
Houston.
Okay. I don't know, Adam. Why doesn't your father have a statue?
My takeaway was, your last name, you literally could go walk in your kitchen and tell us in Portland, like his side of it, but you chose to come here. I viewed it as like a clickbait thing. It wasn't like a legitimate question he was asking.
But I mean...
And then... People responded, and what did he do? He responded to the responses, which kind of validated like my thoughts of like, you didn't really genuinely want to ask this question. Your last name, you could tell us half of the information on this or the perspective, and instead you're going to us so you can respond to people that might be bashing your dad, you know? I thought that was weird.
Like, I'm not bashing Clyde. Clyde was what made me fall in love with the Blazers.
But, sure, he did that for a lot of people.
But where's Clyde at right now?
Right.
Which organization did he decide with?
Which is like cool, but
which organization did he go into the Hall of Fame as a member of? Was it the one he spent most of his career with, or was it the one of his hometown?
Well, according to Adam, he went in with a bow tie. Actually, he was there. He saw it.
Okay.
How do you think the Blazers projecting to be in the tax next year will impact their off-season moves? They get out of the tax. I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, they're not going to be a tax team, and they shouldn't be a tax team. It's very dumb, especially with the new CBA, to be a tax team. There's no reason to be a tax team. So, yeah, no. They're number one, not going to be a tax team going into by the end of next year, but they're going to make moves, I think, that are going to set them up better for the future. Because I think they have to because of where the team is at right now. They have to get things kind of lined up and make sure things make sense going forward. Otherwise, they're going to put themselves behind the eight ball real quick.
Scoot's advanced stats have been historically bad. How do you think the organization's reacting to that?
I think they were, if you put a gun to their head, I think at the beginning of the season they were surprised by how poor he was. Because in camp, the note that came out was like, this kid is getting anywhere he wants to on the floor. They're getting up and down. They're busting. And then I think reality punched him in the face and his confidence got shattered. I think his confidence took a massive, massive hit, and it took a long time to recover. And then you throw the injuries in there, and he just couldn't shoot. He had a case of the yips. And now I think you're seeing more of what you saw from him. Like the final 15 games before he got injured, I think that was more of what they expected. Like, I talked to people going into the season within the organization, and the common back and forth is like, what do you expect him to average? What do you expect him to average? And I was like, 13-6. We talked about, like, what was the expectations. I'm like, 15-5 was the number, right? Like, nobody does 15-5. It doesn't happen. So, yeah. Like, I skewed more towards, I think Scoot will be a better playmaker than he will be scorer. So, I went down on the points and up on the assists. And I think the organizationally, like, not even think, I no, organizationally, I think a lot of people agreed with me. And so when he came out that poor on both ends, just turnovers like crazy, couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, and couldn't finish, it was like, yikes. But I think right now, I think they feel infinitely better than they did.
You certainly would be more plugged in on that intel than I would be. But I do wonder, like, it's not that you're not freaking out, you're not reacting in a major way, because again, as you highlight, he's 19. There's the transition from where you're at to this league, man. It's just, it's one thing to do it in camp. It's another to get to the games. I'm wondering, with a lot of the noise nationally, the emphasis on what next year. And in a way to me, that seems kind of unfair. He's going to be 20, you know, he's 20 years old in year two. And, you know, like, there's a bit of like grow, but if his season's kind of similar, especially with the splits, I think the noise of what he is as a pick is, it's going to get loud nationally. I can't speak to that locally. It doesn't sound like you think they do that.
No, but I think that because he was so bad, and he was, and it sucks. He was so bad. Like, there was supposed to be like a little bit of rivalry between Scoot and Wemby, and then Chet was going to be a guy that you sprinkled in. Like, Scoot was going to have it. Like, if Scoot had, like I said, the previous 15 games before he gets hurt, if that had been his season, where he shoots like 40% from the field, 41% from the field, like 36 from three, averages like 12-6.
You feel a lot better.
13-6. Like, yeah. And he has like a couple of those like big nights. It's a very, he cratered so hard to start the season that people were like, oh shit, like, did we get bamboozled?
Right.
I hate doing this because he's a kid, and I don't kill kids when it comes to like the, yeah, that's a great
drop.
Can
we pull that?
That's a great drop. I don't kill kids.
On your radio show. And Danny Meringue, I don't kill kids.
Adults, open season. But no, it's serious. Like, I don't, because you need 4 years. You need 4 years to figure stuff out. Like, first ballot Hall of Famer Damian Lillard has told me more times than I could count, like, I didn't know what I was doing until year three.
Ants kind of echoed the same stuff.
Yeah, it's just, it takes a long time to like really, really, really get there. But he cratered so hard after like kind of being up there with the hype machine that the fall was so far that I think it distorted his like the version of his career.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it has to be the narrative or that it should be, but that I think a lot of people took a step back and be like, yikes.
How many more games do you think they win this year?
22 games remaining. Let me pull up the schedule real quick. Took
17 wins, right?
I took the under on 22.5.
I know you
at
did.
The All-Star break.
Yeah.
So,
I kind of agreed. I was nodding my head like, yes, 21 wins. 21 wins.
22 wins even. 22, sure. 22 wins. Okay. Let's play win-loss real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
Thunder, loss, Rockets. Loss. Yeah, I'll give them the win.
Toss up.
Okay, yeah. So that's a viable one. Raptors?
Yes.
Raptors suck. That's another win.
Possible win.
Celtics, they're getting the living crap beat out of them. It might be a 40-point loss. Hawks?
Hawks are weird. They're not
Trae Young, but they're also going to play harder for Quinn to get Trae out of there. I'll give the Hawks. Hawks and the Knicks both wins, but then they go on the road to the Pelicans. That's a loss. On the road to the Bulls.
Loss.
Okay, I'll go with that. Okay. Two home games against the Clippers. They're going to lose both of those. They're going to lose to the Nuggets at home. They go, and then they go on that road trip from hell.
Yes.
They go to the Rockets.
Yep.
Loss?
Loss. Okay. Well, they did win there earlier this year.
Let's give them the Rockets loss, and then they beat the Hawks. So they have three wins now.
Okay.
At Miami, loss. At Orlando, loss. At Charlotte.
Loss. Charlotte's better.
Yes,
Charlotte's better.
I think so too. At the Wizards, win.
God, I hope so. It's like
they're not going to lose the season series to the Wizards.
Dude, the Wizards are like a team I do not want to lose to. I don't care about the tanking ping pong. Yeah. Ping pong
ball. At the Celtics, loss. And then they end the season with Pelicans, loss. Warriors, loss. Rockets.
Maybe.
You might be steering into the skid. So go loss, loss. That's four wins. That's 21.
21. Yeah.
With a wiggle room with two games there.
Right. So coin
20, 22 and a half was a really good line.
That's dark. How do you view fit versus talent in the draft? How does this current group's performance affect decision making?
I went into this in my thought process of my first tier list 2 weeks ago. The idea of fit versus best player available. If the best player available in this draft is a 6'3 guard, I don't think the Blazers would take him.
Hmm.
Unless they were this player is the LeBron James or Victor Wembanyama of guards. It's the only way that I believe the Blazers would take said guard.
I certainly LeBron of that at that position, yes, but I would also echo I would be afraid that Portland would riot as a city if we draft a 6'3 guard.
That's what I'm saying. They know that.
I think
organizationally, they know that, which is great because there's not a ton of guards in this draft.
No, it's more forward center heavy.
So yeah, it's more wings and bigs. Yeah. Let me take a look. I have my mock right here. Let's see the shortest player in here. Toppich, Castle, Jacoby Walter at 77 inches, which is what, 6'5"? Yeah. Jacoby Walter is the shortest guy on my list at 6'5".
Jeez.
Yeah. And even then, he's way down there.
You're going to enjoy this one. I actually read this and I thought of you.
Mm.
This might be tough to answer.
I like that.
But how real are these injury issues? Is this just a repeat of the past two seasons for tanking purposes? Or are there real issues that could hamper this team long term?
Well, you know, it's actually a deep psyop. Shaedon Sharpe did not actually have surgery. That 7-foot, 250-pound dude that you saw get undercut in midair and fall flat on his ass from 4 feet in the air and land on his wrist didn't do that.
I heard Shaedon was actually not in Portland. He was making TikToks for Joe Biden.
Yeah, it's a body double. It's not actually Shaedon. It's not Shaedon Sharpe. It's
Shannon Sharpe.
Yeah, it's Shandon Blunt.
Steve Sharp.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, they're real right now. And look, I get it. I understand. But take 2 seconds, guys. Take 2 seconds
to look and see what's going on. It's a pretty serious thing.
They're tanking. Why? If they're tanking, why wouldn't they want their rookie point guard who hasn't been good on the floor?
Yeah.
With the nod to the last 2 years' egregious tanking, come on, guys. Come on.
This is a good one. Any update on how Suns fans are coping with the roller coaster ride of glory and ouchie that is Yusuf Nurkic?
I mean, he did have 31 rebounds the other night. He had 13 offensive rebounds and 14 points, which I found very funny. I'm like, how do you touch the ball that much and not get more like, how do you get 13 offensive rebounds and only get 14 points? I thought that was a little bit weird.
He's had some real Nurkic-y nights where it's like, oh, this is nice. And then like the next night, where is he? What happened?
Mm-hmm.
It's been that.
That roller coaster ride has not stopped.
No, both, you know, Nurk gave me hell for putting Ayton above him, but they both have their eccentricities, to say the
least. Is he going
to
be the scapegoat?
I don't know. KD's pretty easy to scapegoat.
You know, I think KD's may skip easy to scapegoat with like the hot take people on TV, but like legitimately, I'm wondering if the organization is going to quietly steer like, you know, if this guy would stay on the court, maybe we'd actually have a center out here. Like, I won't be shocked if they get bumped in round one or two and like you start to hear some Nurkic stuff of like, you know, I don't know.
I mean, there's a few lunatics out there who are like, they need more Bol Bol minutes, which... Look, if that's what you're calling for, you deserve what you get.
People are calling for Bol Bol minutes?
Yeah, it's a real thing.
That's pretty wild to me.
Yeah.
At what point are we going to stop doing that?
Look, I too like to root for a guy who actively doesn't like the sport, but hey, sure, whatever.
I actively hate the league. I love the sport, but I hate the league.
You and Bol get along together.
Yeah. I honestly like a lot of our guys, but am I wrong to think that most of the roster is 7th to 10th men at best? This kind of hits on what we talked about earlier. It's kind of how I feel.
I think you could open that like 5th to 10th.
Yeah.
But that's if you discount the first three guys, which with Ant, like if Ant is a starter on your team and you've got like the right guys around, you've got a bunch of wings around him. Okay. Yeah. Until Ant takes that next step. Yeah. I don't think it's unfair. 7 through 10, probably a little unfair, but
I assume that question in nature is coming from a spot of like, I'm watching Ashton Hagans right now. You know, like not.
Yeah, like that's further down the road for sure.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And I love Ash, how much he competes, but like there's a reason he's on a two-way.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I mean, like I might not feel as excited to watch these games live or watch like a quarter or whatever, but I'm rooting for guys like that. This is kind of crunch time for their career.
It was funny. I went in the locker room after the game against the Heat and talked to Ash real quick. I was like, "Hey man, it's fun to watch you and Bam battle. You know, you're in a different weight class than him." He goes, "Yeah man, that's a Kentucky bond." And I was like, "It totally just the light bulb went off again. Like, oh that's right. Shit, Bam and Ashton both went to Kentucky."
I didn't know Ashton was a Kentucky guy.
Yeah,
I don't
Kentucky
watch
guy. Yeah,
basketball.
No, I knew that, but I just like did not put that together. And also, Bam is like the least Kentucky guy that's ever Kentuckied.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when I think of Kentucky bigs, I don't think Bam Adebayo. I think Anthony Davis.
Cat.
I think very large dudes.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Willie Cauley-Stein.
Right.
You know, I don't think of Bam for some reason. Like it's funny, like Bam and Tyler Harrow being Kentucky guys is something that I'm always like, oh, that's right, they are Kentucky guys. Same with like Malik Monk.
Mm-hmm.
They did for whatever reason they don't resonate like De'Aaron Fox that resonates Kentucky, even though Fox and Monk are on the same team. So it's like I you know throws me off.
I only have one more question.
Yeah. What you got?
We got through them. Do you trust the Thunder to get to the West Finals?
So much of that depends on seeding. So much of that depends on seeding. If they
let's say the seeding is exactly what it is right now. I'll give you those matchups. Give me a second.
Okay.
Give me a quick second. I'll pull it up. So right now, our standings in the West, you got Minnesota's the one, OKC's the two, Denver's the three, Clippers, Pelicans, Suns, and then your play-in would be Sacramento versus Dallas, LA versus Golden State. Loser of Sacramento-Dallas will play the winner of LA-Golden State.
Yeah, that 2-3 matchup's a problem.
That 2-3 matchup is an instant. You're out of the playoffs,
sir.
Yeah,
they need to get that one or they need the Nuggets to fall down. They need to meet the Nuggets.
They're both half game back.
They need the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals to meet them. And they need to avoid the Lakers. They don't have the size for either of those teams yet. And that's the big question, everybody. But if they can avoid that, Everybody's like, well, the playoffs is different. I'm like, yeah, it gets worse. It's more physical, and it gets slowed down even more. It is a compounding issue come playoff time. Chet, as tough as he is going to get folded like a lawn chair. AD's got 70 pounds on him. I love Chet. I think he's going to be a tremendous player. But he's weight classes exist for a reason, Brandon.
I know.
But I believe in that team more fundamentally based on who they are and what they are than I do Minnesota. Minnesota's mental makeup, I love Conley. Conley's the only adult on that team.
Mm.
Whereas OKC's seemingly a team full of adults, sans Josh Giddey, which we're not even going to go there.
It's an awkward topic. My dream Final Four, I think at this point, fairly obvious in the East. I want Milwaukee, Boston, and I think the OKC story is fun.
Mm-hmm.
I love SGA. Minnesota's like a fun surprise. I love Ant. I want Clippers, Denver. I think that's the great Western Conference matchup.
It is stylistically a very different thing because and the Clippers have to be healthy.
Yes, I agree with that. Yes.
Because all of a sudden, the Nuggets can really punish the Clippers. But if the Clippers go small and they're able to capitalize, how do the Nuggets respond? They don't have a counterpunch to that, but that's the whole point. Is like you have an MVP, blah, 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 you know.
Right.
So,
right.
I would like to see OKC get there because I love Shea. I love, again, quirky, weird point guards. Like, I love weird, like the fact that all he does is cook you in a box.
Mm-hmm.
For 35 minutes with footwork. Yeah, that's my jam. That's my jam. 100%. I love Shea. J Dub is a hell of a player. He's moving. He's new Chris Middleton. Like, you're just going to look down like, oh, that guy's all NBA.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and Chet's an MF-er, man. Like, he's got a lot of dog in that X-ray. So,
yeah, I'd imagine OKC was pretty pleasantly surprised getting J-Dub to step up the way he did this year, man. Because like that,
they
was
thought he was going to be good. They didn't think he was going to be this good.
It's the SGA thing all over again, really.
It's found
like, oh yeah, man. He's good, but
no, he's like he can be your number two on a title team. Yes. Like you could, you have no issues like with that. Like, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I kind of want to see them like. I don't trust that Timberwolves team. Anthony Edwards is an incredible player, but my God, man, I do not trust that man.
We've seen Cat in big moments. We've seen Gobert in the playoffs. Like, maybe they'll prove us wrong, but I'm 100% with you. I don't trust him as far as I could throw him. So, that's all the questions, my man. That is the mailbag for Jack Ramsey.
Good little mailbag.
Great mailbag.
We have a 6-game homestand for the Portland Trailblazers. That means there won't be any watch parties for this. Well, obviously, the 7-game road trip will be there for that. We got tomorrow is God. I always do this. Tomorrow's Thunder, which is speaking of SGA.
Okay.
Then Friday is the Rockets, and then Saturday is the Raptors. So, stylistically, some different opportunities here, and hopefully by this weekend, DA and Scooter back, and you can maybe get a few more data points.
Yeah, it'd be really nice to see Scoot back out there.
I think that's the hope right now, like getting down, like get to this weekend and have those guys back. Then the final 3 weeks of the season, 4 weeks of the season, is significantly more bearable. Like, it makes more sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
There you go. You got anything else?
I don't have anything else, man. Those are great questions. Nice to kind of run through the situation, the draft stuff, and the West playoffs. Should give you a heads up, not you, but people out there. We don't have anything locked down concrete, but Danny and I have talked about doing a draft lottery thing again.
Yeah, even if it's on Sunday, go somewhere on location and do what we did for the last one at Bricks.
Yeah.
So we'll talk to a few companies, and I know there's no shortage of places that would want to have us. So we'll try, if we do something, we'll try to find something somewhat centrally located. Like, we won't go out to like Hillsborough or Gresham or something like that. We'll try to keep it a little bit tighter on this side of town. We'll put something together there. Brandon won't be out there, but Dusty and I and Isaac and Suk will be out at A-Lin-A now that we can officially say that,
yep,
for March Madness, the opening round of the tournament. We will be out there Thursday and Friday. I need to convince the old casino to hand me the old room rate, so I'm not driving from Newburgh to Alenay back and forth.
Dude, that'd be pretty sick though on Thursday to get out there, hang out, place your bets, get a couple drinks, maybe see a show or so, get a nice dinner, and then stay at the room and then wake up and do the show.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I don't want to drive 2 hours each way twice.
No, that'd be sick.
So, be sick. But yeah, if you guys want to come out there and join us, we'll be live on location. We'll do the shows at Alenay Thursday and Friday, and then I'll be out there. I think I've got a game one night, so I'll probably bail out of there for a little bit and then come back, which Alenay to Moda is a little bit easier to...
Straight shot.
To handle, yeah. Actually, it's on the same freeway. So
yes, it is.
That makes it easy. As per usual, you can catch Brandon every morning. Is your co-host back yet? Still a long time till he's back, too.
Can I tell you this?
Yeah, I've been so,
like,
you've been so lonely?
Well, I've been so lonely, but like, I'm such a miserable prick as a person that not only have I been like...
Have you made him feel bad about it?
No, I would never do that. But no, listen to me. So I was thinking this morning, I'm like, I have X amount of shows left, and then he's back. He'll be back on the 18th, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I have X amount of shows left. And then I had this existential dread just shower my thoughts, and I'm like, he's going to have another kid in 18 months. I'm going to have to get ready for this in 18 months. Like, mentally, I'm already preparing.
18 months away, you're already like, no.
Bro, he's in his mid-30s. The reality is most people want two kids when they... When they wait till their 30s, mid-30s, they're going to have a second kid quick.
What do you think I've told Dusty?
Yes, exactly. Same thing.
He knows what's coming.
Popping them out left and right like rabbits, just seasoned. Mm-hmm. And I'm like...
Maybe we'll get lucky and we'll get twins. Be done.
Knocking it out in one shot would be an all-star ball.
One boy, one girl.
Oh, my God, dude. You'd feel like the greatest man of all time.
Oh, dude, I'd victory lap that so hard. Look what I did!
I'm the greatest semen ever.
Be dapping my balls up. Good job, boys.
I'm getting off. I'm going
this is going so off the rails. And this is what happens. Appreciate you guys. Love you. Like, rate, view, subscribe. You can find us on social media at Danny Brink, at Brent Sprague, at Jack Ramsey.
Jesus, dude. Let me dab your balls, man. Let me dab that.
There you go. Good job, guys. Sometimes it's best just to not say things that come into your head out loud. Email the show, jacksrandis@gmail.com. You can find Brandon every morning with his soon-to-be co-host again on Dirt and Sprague, 6 to 9 a.m. You can find me and my co-host, Dusty Era, noon to 3 every day on 1080 a.m. The Fan. Otherwise, everybody have a wonderful, wonderful night. Take care. Talk soon. And we'll catch you on the next one. Bye.